The third Mishnah of the first parak, Antigonus Ishoichai Kiva Mishimon HaTzadik. Antigonus Ishoichai received from Mishimon HaTzadik, who are Omer, and he would say, Al Tiyu Ka'avodim HaMasham Shin HaSarav Amanasa Kabal Paras. Do not be like those servants who serve the master in order to receive reward. Rather, you should be like those servants who serve without any thought of receiving payment. And you should fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is a well-known Mishnah, and the Rebbe Yonah puts it, if a person serves the master, Amanas the Kabbal Pras, that's not Avoda Shleima. That's not the complete, perfect method of serving Hashem. Because you're not doing it only for the Rav, you're doing it to Mekabel Pras, for the rewards. The higher level is to serve the master without intent of getting rewards. So why are you doing it? You're doing it because of Avas Hashem. And the Rav Ben Yonah writes this, this is Avodas Hashem Mi'ava, like it says, V'hafta Shem Lokecho. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva also gives a long description of serving Hashem Mi'ava, not for any other reason, just for the sake of doing the Ratzon Hashem. And it's a very high madrega that very few people achieve. The Rambam says it straight out. This is not something that is achieved by everyone. So the first thing is just to look at the Mishnah itself. Don't be like those avodim who serve the Rav in order to get the paras, but be like those avodim who serve the Rav not to get the paras. And Rav Shiva of Warmsgon Vacha told us that if the Tana is describing Avodas Hashem in terms of Avodim, it's because the Tana was referring to something that the people of his time were familiar with. The Tana is giving a metaphor that everyone could relate to. And in the time of the Tana, there were two types of Avodim. There were Avodim who served Amanas HaKal Pras, and there were Avodim who served not Amanas HaKal Pras. So he asked us, what kind of Eved serves the master? What kind of slave or servant is going to be involved in serving his master, not Lakabas? You want to tell me that a child will do for his parent because he loves his parent? You want to tell me that a spouse will do for their spouse because they love them? So fine, they don't do it because of reward, they do it because they love them. But, and by the way, Shir Hashirim is built on that mashal. Shir Hashirim is built on the mashal of people in love. But what is the Tana telling us? Is there such a thing as a slave or a servant who is serving his master without any thoughts to reward and payment? And Rav Shiva told us, absolutely. Clearly, there existed such avodah. What was their motive? Was it love? Unlikely. We should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mi'av without intent of the Kal Pras, because there are Avadim who also serve the master without the Kal Pras. But what is their motive? It's unlikely that the slaves and servants were in love with their masters. It's unlikely. He told us the Pshat like this. There were Avadim whose whole purpose in life was serving their master. That was their identity. That was who they were known as. If somebody asked you, who are you? I'm so-and-so's servant. And that was Choshev. Depending on who your master was, the more important your master, if you were the governor's slave, that was more Choshev than a landowner slave. And if you're a landowner slave, it's better than the blacksmith slave. There are madregas of who you work for. And the higher echelons of society that you work for made you more Choshev. And we even find this reference in Chumash Rashi, the areas that were adjacent to Eretz Yisrael had a greatness. Nahar Paras is called Nahar Gadol. Why? Because it's close to Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi says, because Eved Melech Melech. When you're the Eved of the Melech, you have power. That's something to it. The Avodim the Tan is referring to were Avodim who would serve the master without intent of receiving any payment. That's not why they're serving. They would serve without getting paid. Now, they did get room, they got board, and so on. Maybe they got money too, maybe they didn't. But they didn't want to do anything else because then they'd have no purpose in life. that have no reason to exist. Their whole essence was so-and-so's Eved. What the Tana is telling us is that we should serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with an understanding that our entire essence and being is at being Hashem's Eved. There is nothing else. That gives us existence. That gives us purpose. If we're not Eved Hashem, we're nothing. Another way of putting it is, the way the Rambam describes in the beginning of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the only true Nimtza, everything else He creates. When we recognize that we are totally dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we exist. When we separate ourselves from Ribbono Shel Olam, then we don't. And He told us that this is the attempt of the Yetzer Hara throughout life, whatever the chet. The Yetzer Hara's goal is to make us believe that we can be independent of Ribbono Shel Olam. Every chet is by definition, I don't have to listen to Ribbono Shel Olam. I can exist without Ribbono Shel Olam. I am independent of Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the falsehood of the Yetzer Hara. And that's what He's trying to convince us, that we can be without Hashem. And it's not true. When the Tana says, don't be like those avodim who serve their master on Kassel B'Pras, meaning to say, with a notion of an independence, but I decide to serve you and I'll get something out of it because it's worthwhile for me. You should be one who serves the master, Shalolu Kal Pras, but because this is who I am. This is what gives me purpose. This is what gives me a reason for my existence. It's way beyond the concepts like, again, Rabbeinu says it's Avodah Me'ahava, and the Rambam says it too, to serve Hashem because you love Hashem for no ulterior motive. But that comes when you recognize how dependent we are on the Ribbono Shel Olam, how our existence depends on the Ribbono Shel Olam.
What is Ahava? Really? The one way Ahava, even as a chasher, is the pride.
Well, it's a different concept, right? It's not the Ahava we think of when we think of men and women, or perhaps children with the parents. If children with parents, maybe some closer. An Ahava Shein Tluv, perhaps, I don't know how you say it like that or not. But basically, it's a recognition of Kadosh Baruch Hu's greatness, our dependence on Kadosh Baruch Hu, and our understanding that this is what gives me purpose in life, and this is what gives meaning to my life, and this is what gives me existence. In which case, I don't need to get paid. This is what I am. And this is what I am, this is what I'm going to do regardless. There was a time when he said to us, that was how women were in marriage. It's not that way anymore, but there was a time when women were Mrs. So-and-so. That's who they were. Their essence was defined by their husbands. Women didn't work. They may not have been educated. Their whole mahus, their whole essence was being so-and-so's wife. It was unheard of for a woman to demand a divorce. That's like suicide. And that's how it was. That's how the world was at one time. Not even the Jewish world, non-Jewish world too. That was how people defined themselves. It's changed over time. That has changed. But I'm saying, in concept, it's the idea is not so far from our ability to understand. The Tana again gave a mashal that was suited for his time, but the point he was making was that this is what gave the person. If you understand, this is what gives you purpose and importance. Then you don't need to get paid for it. This is what I am. Now,
the easier time to understand than hoping
that. What?
Those days had an easier time keeping
it. Oh, yeah. Everything's harder today. Everything's hard. When people had monarchs, when you lived in a kingdom, people knew what it was to be afraid of a king. And when they say Hashem is the Melech, Malachim, Lachim, it meant something. Today, how many monarchs are there left? The few in the Arab countries, here and there in Europe. Some of them are just figureheads. The Volb, Zichron Vacha, writes in Ali Shur, the Shechina is in Golos, in the Bria, in the world, when there's no monarchs that are powerful. It's so much harder for us to relate to the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Melech. Years ago I heard a shmuz that Elul in Europe, people knew what Elul was. They knew what it was to shake, that you're going to be judged by the king. We have no concept. We don't know what it means to be judged by the king. And therefore, our El is not the same El as it was once upon a time. It's much harder to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there are those who say that when we do serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's that much more valuable now when we do it, despite the fact that the Shechina is in Golos and we don't have monarchs and so on. So there's a certain value to the mitzvahs we do today that perhaps surpasses previous generations. And I've heard it said that that's what's taking Mashiach so long to come, because Ribbono Shel Olam gets such a nachas ruach from the mitzvahs we do under the circumstances that we live in, which is greater perhaps than previous generations when it was easier to do the same things.
Hashem's being so selfish? Like, how does that make sense?
Well, it's not a question of selfish. But let's talk about schar in general now. And I want to come back to something we mentioned in the past that needs clarification. We take from this Mishnah a very basic premise that we're not interested in schar. We should do mitzvahs without regard to the schar. There is schar for mitzvahs. There's reward for mitzvahs. There are people who serve Hashem because they want the reward. It's not the end of the world. There's worse reasons to do mitzvahs. The people do mitzvahs because they want people to think they're great. The people that do it for cover, the people do it for gaiva. That's not good. The next level is people do it for schar. It's not great. It's not perfect. It's not the end of the world. A person wants to get Olam Haba. He wants to get Peresei Olam Hazeh. It's not perfect avoida, but it's avoida, and it's on the right track. The highest level are people do it because it's the right thing to do, regardless of schar or not, without regard to schar. When we do mitzvahs and we don't have regard to schar, does it make sense to say, I'll do the mitzvah and give the schar away to somebody else? And can a person do a mitzvah and give the schar away to somebody else? And we've had this discussion when it came to Hafrashas Challah, when women band together and they're mafrish challah in groups, if it's 40 people, whatever it is, and they have in mind for a particular person who's a chayla, or a person maybe doesn't have children, or a person who needs a shidduch, whatever the reasons they do it for. So does that mean that the women who are mafrish challah have given up their schar of Rosh Hashanah by doing this, by saying, and the schus, this mitzvah, go to so-and-so. So I have discovered that there is an apparent debate as to whether or not such a thing is possible in the first place. There is a tshuva from Maharam al-Shaker, quoting Rav Hai Gon, discussing people who've done mitzvahs and they want to sell the schar. And Rav Hai Gon says there's no such thing. You cannot sell schar. Schar is not something you carry around in a bag and you go and trade it for somebody else for money. It doesn't work. You can't sell it. If a person recognized what it was, he wouldn't want to sell it, and it's not transferable. There's no such thing. If schar mitzvahs is not transferable, so what's happening when these women are being mafrish challah? So I came across an explanation, which makes a lot of sense to me, and the explanation is as follows. No one is giving away the schar of mafrish challah. The schar is entirely the person who's mafrish challah. It's non-transferable. You can't give it to anyone else. However, we have a principle that tefillos are very potent when they come on the heels of a mitzvah. When we do a mitzvah, it's a shas ha-kosher, it's an eis ratzon for tefillah. That's why women say yehi ratzon when they light candles Friday night. They light candles, they dusted the mitzvah of hadlakas neiros. Now's a good time to mispalel, because when you've done a mitzvah, it's a potent time, it's a powerful time to mispalel. Mishnah Berurah says that's pshat naharachamim. So when you bench, birchas hamazon ends by yichasreinu. Benching ends after the fourth bracha. What's all the harachamim? The harachamans are tefillos that we append to Birchas HaMazon, because I just finished the mitzvah of Birchas HaMazon, v'chalta v'savata v'rachta. Now's a good time to ask for things. So all the harachamans are like bakashos. I'm requesting from HaKadosh Baruch Hu various things when I have finished the mitzvah of Birchas HaMazon. When you do a mitzvah, it's a shasa kosher. So it could well be that when 40 women are mafrish challah, you don't need 40 women. Any woman is mafrish challah. But when you have 40, it's that much more. So when you're mafrish challah, you just did a mitzvah. Chaper rein. Say a tefillah. So after you're mafrish challah, you say a tefillah for so-and-so. It's the tefillah that helps the person, not the schar of the mafrish challah. Schar of mafrish challah is yours. You can't give that away. It doesn't go to anyone else. It's your mafrish challah. But the tefillah is powerful at the time of Rosh Hashanah. And I guess the more people who do it, so the more people that are being mispalel. But it's a din in tefillah. It's not a din in challah. It's just using the chal as an opportunity to mispal. It's a very reasonable approach. I don't know if the women taka say the tefillah or say a bakasha after the mafresh. They should. They should say whatever they're going to say after the mafresh. It's a shas hakayisha for tefillah.
Two things. So how about a lot of times people do things in those close to someone who passed away? So isn't that the same thing, sort of?
Like what?
Like donate money.
Ah, tzedakah is one. And the second is?
Mishnah.
Learning Torah. Excellent. There are two things we do for Aliyah Neshama. We give tzedakah, and we learn. So I've heard it said, I've seen it also brought down, when you give tzedakah, you're giving a spal for the neshama. It's the tefillahs. In other words, the original, the origin of money for neshamas comes from Yizkor. Mm. By Yizkor, they'd say a tefillah, right, and they would give, donate tzedakah. Kel mali rachamim, bavur sheyitin tzedakah bavur. So, it's not the tzedakah per se, as much as it is the tefillah when they're committing to give the tzedakah.
If they don't have tefillah, then it's
you
right.
Donate, it's nothing.
If you just give the money and never say a word, just think. According to this, it doesn't help the neshama. Really? You can't. The schar for the giving tzedakah is your schar.
But isn't it? It's
non-transferable.
But it's sort of,
the Gemara says a person gave tzedakah for her son to get a refuah shlema. Amanasha yichye bni. It's not the pshat that the tzedakah is going to the son. The pshat is that now it's a time of ratzon, and he's being mispal that his son should have a refuah. He should mispal when he gives it tzedakah.
But isn't it, if you're the cause of someone doing a mitzvah, you also get schar, don't you?
That's something else. That's the schar of causing someone to do a mitzvah, but you don't get the schar of the mitzvah. You get a different schar.
Right.
You get the schar of causing someone to do a mitzvah.
So doing it in someone's fault, or doing it...
It wouldn't have done it anyways, but they're doing it.
But they didn't cause it.
Yeah,
causing it is someone who helps you do a mitzvah. When you say someone causes, that means I'll drive you to such and such a place so you could do the mitzvah there.
You don't think that's counted? This person, I'm doing a certain mitzvah.
The fact that they unfortunately fell ill and now you're davening for them,
yeah,
they didn't cause.
It's you would have done another
way. They're suffering because their suffering is causing
them. And by the way, the same is true with Tehillim.
Right.
Tehillim is Torah, and then you say Yehiratzon or Mishaberach on the heels of reciting the psukim. So it's the tefillah that has the koyach. That's this approach.
What the yeshivos that advertise will learn?
Day of learning, Parnas Hayom, and this was.
They don't daven for you.
They must be davening for them.
Do they?
Now, that's one approach. There's a story which bothered me very much. This is a very, to me, a very logical, sound approach, which fits in with Rav Hai Gaon and Maharal Shachar. There's a story, and one of his kashas on a truth from a story, but it's a well-known story, and it drives home a point that we'll say other mefarshim say different. There's a story about the Vilna Gaon that there was no esrog in Vilna. One sukkah, they could not find an esrog in Vilna. He sent out people to find in the neighboring towns, go further and further, go to Italy, go wherever, to find an esrog. They couldn't find an esrog, and finally, they find a person, a yid, who has a gorgeous esrog. And they tell me when to buy it. I'm not selling it. We need the esrog. There's no esrog in Vilna. Nope. Name your price. I'm not selling it. The Vilna Gaon does not have an esrog. Says the Vilna Gaon wants to use this esrog. Tell you what. I'll sell you the esrog, but not for money. I want the schar of the Vilna Gaon's Natilas Laluf, and that I'll take for payment. So, being that the shliach had no alternative, he agreed and brought the esrog back to Vilna. And he told the Vilna Gaon that this is the esrog we found. It's gorgeous. He expected it. That's beautiful. There's one problem. The problem is the person who sold it only sold it on condition, not for money, but that the schar of your mitzvah, Natilas Luluv, goes to him. So the way the story goes, Vilna Gaon said, fine. I'm so happy to serve the Ibn Shalom. I don't need the schar. I'm not doing it for the schar. I'm doing it because I want to do the Ratzon Hashem. What do I care who gets the schar? It's Gevaldik. He was very happy. That's how the story goes. According to Maharal Shachar, there's no such thing. There's no such sale. You can't trade the schar for the esrog. It doesn't work. He could get schar for helping the Vilna Gaon mekayim the mitzvah. That's a different kind of schar. It's a schar of helping someone do the mitzvah. But it's not the schar of the Vilna Gaon's Natilas Luluv. But the way this story brings it, that's the schar he gets. So we could just say, well, the story is not true because the Maharal Shachar brings up Hai Gaon that it's not true.
Doesn't it seem kind of kind of silly though? Like, we don't know what scar even means. We're like dealing with something that we don't even know. We're like,
but the Vilna Gaon does know.
I know, but I'm saying like, is that still a valid sale? Like, if you sold it on condition of something that can possibly happen?
No, then it would be, according to our Shaka, the sale was not a sale at all. And then it's the Esrik HaGozel, it's not his Esrik, it's not his. If the story is true, he must disagree with this whole idea we just said before about Schar not being transferable. There is a halach in Shulchan Aruch about a concept you're familiar with called Yisachar Zevulun, where there are two people, one who makes a lot of money and one who would like to learn but he's busy at work. And the one who has the money tells the one other one, listen, you don't work. You just sit and learn. And I'll pay your way. And according to many, it has to be an exact 50-50 split. He gives half of the panosa, they split between Zvul and Yisachar. And then half of Yisachar, Sechar, goes to Zvul. And the Shukharach brings this. It's a Beis Yosef, it's a Ramah, based on Rabbeinu Yeruchim. So there are many who are troubled with the Maram al-Shakar and the Vaigon. If schar is not transferable, how do you sell your schar of Torah study to someone else?
Is it the same thing? They each get their own schar for help. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's not what it says. It says they split the schar. You don't need it tonight. To just give someone money who's sitting and learning, I could do that anyway. And I'll get schar for helping him learn.
Right.
But I won't get the schar of his learning. This is implying they're splitting the schar of Yisachar's Torah.
Well, doesn't the wife get the schar of the husband's learning also?
Well, they say she's also a zvul of
right,
the types.
Same thing.
So, there are swarms that try to reconcile the two. I came across a piece from Vilna Gaon, that's Chaim Volozh in his Talmud, in the Sefer Keserosh, where they asked him, they asked Chaim Volozh, about Yisachar Zevulun, which sounds like you're only learning for schar, and you're not supposed to learn for schar. We just learned that Teglis Yisachar, you should serve without schar. So what does it mean to be a Yisachar? And he's going to pay me now. So the Chaim Volozh said it's fine, it's permitted. And Adraba, if you're not going to want to give a chelik of your learning to the other fellow, it looks like you want to keep all the schar for yourself, and ultimately minimizing the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So rather, your intent should be to do Hashem's Ratzon, even if it means you won't get more than half the schar of your learning, because otherwise you won't be able to learn all day. If you don't take the money, you're going to learn half a day and you'll work half a day. If you take the money, you can learn all day, and that gives Nachas Ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a whole day's learning. So good, so he'll get half of your schar. Why does it bother you? You're doing Hashem's Ratzon. You're making it something that the Ribbono Shel Olam appreciates. So clearly he is learning that Yisachar Schar is diminished, and that shouldn't be a reason not to do it. Why should there be a reason not to do it? You don't concerned about your Schar? Don't be concerned about your Schar. Do sit and learn all day, because Hashem wants you to learn all day. There's no other way for me to do it except I take money from him, so do it. This particular sefer brings on the side a story that this also is printed in Tshuva Sitz Eliezer, that the Shmuel Salant said over when he was a boy in Salant. There are two brothers, one was wealthy and one was sitting and learning. And the wealthy brother would give the one sitting and learning 3 rubles every week. After a while, the wealthy brother says, I'm not giving you 3 rubles anymore. The only way I'll agree to give you 3 rubles is if you give me half of your learning. I want to share in your learning. So the brother who was learning didn't want to do it, and they decided they're going to ask Reb Chaim Volozh. And whatever he says goes. So they went to Reb Chaim Volozh, and he said, try to convince your wealthy brother, what are you worried about getting a chelik half his schar Torah? You get schar for supporting learning. It's gewaldig schar, eitz chaim hi l'machazik ba. Supporting Torah is great. You don't have to take half his schar like Yisachar and Zevulun. But in the end, he says, if he won't agree, you can accept the deal. So the Eliezer explains why. What was the kind of illusion back and forth, really try to convince him not to do it, but in the end, if you have to do it, you can do it. He says because he was worried about the Maram al-Shakar. The Maram al-Shakar says you can't trade in Schar. So at first, just don't do such a deal. Just, he should support your learning, and that's it. But if he refuses, you can rely on the Ramah, who says you can do such a deal. So it seems to be that there's no way to resolve it. It's a machlokas. There's two different viewpoints. And according to this, it's possible to transfer schar, in which case the story of the Vilna Gaon would make sense. There's a further story, this is from Chaim Voloshin. There's a story from the Netziv, who was Rosh Hashiva in Voloshin, that the Netziv, when he was Rosh Hashiva, he was asked, and it's written up in the Meshuv Dov, his Chumas, about selling schar from mitzvahs. And he makes a fascinating observation, also not like the Maharal Shaker. He says, it's one thing to give someone schar in a mitzvah you do, but schar in Torah is not so simple. When a person helps you do a mitzvah, they'll share in your mitzvah. When a person helps you learn Torah, they don't share in your Torah. Why is that? He gives this long mashal of a melech and a kingdom. Again, they had kings in his time. And if a person does something good, the king gives a prize, gives a medal. Anyone could wear the medal. You can give it to someone else. Is it a disgrace to the melech that you gave your medal away? That's a shiloh, if you're allowed to do that. But one person could hang the medal up over the mantle, just the other person can hang the medal up the mantle. There's another time, though, a different type of reward, where the king sees that a particular soldier is very good and very smart and knows strategy, and he gives him a promotion, and as a reward, he makes him a general. He can't give that to somebody else. You can't just take anybody off the street and make him into a general. He doesn't know the first thing about what he's doing. So the Netziv says, when it comes to mitzvahs, we're all the same. And the schar for a mitzvah could be transferred, and you don't need any special conditions up front. If I help you do a mitzvah, I'm going to get schar from your mitzvah that you do, because I have to do a mitzvah. When it comes to Torah, how can you transfer schar of Torah? The schar of Torah is, you're going to sit in the Masifta Derekia, you're going to sit in the Beis Medrash and Shemayim, you're going to be involved in the Shir. If you are not part of that world, you won't know what's flying. You won't know how to open your mouth. You'll be like a general who knows nothing about war. It'll just be embarrassing. There's no reward like that. You can't give that to someone. The chiddush of the Ramah is that if I make Yisachar Zevulun deal with a precondition, I'll sit together with Yisachar and Shemayim. We'll be together in the Beis Medrash. Yisachar might not be in the same Beis Medrash he would have been without you, but you'll be right, the Yisachar will be right there with Yisachar. And that's unique to Yisachar Zevulun, as opposed to someone who just supports Torah. He'll get tremendous schar for supporting Torah, but it's not going to be in Yisachar's Beis Medrash and Shemayim. He won't know it's flying in Yisachar's Beis Medrash and Shemayim. So that's how the Siv once said, Torah is different than everything else and requires a special Yisachar's Zevulun kind of deal. Clearly, the way that the Siv is learning, Chaim Voloshin is learning the story of the Vilna Gaon, they're learning that schar is transferable. If you learn like that, then the women who are mafa shchalah maybe are giving away the schar. So that's what you have to know. Are they giving away the schar of my mitzvah shachar is going to so-and-so, which would work according to this approach? Or is it just a tefillah at the time of HaFrasha, which is the first way of
learning? But they're getting more schar. They're giving away their schar to someone who needs it. That's something else.
And again, that could also be, well, who cares? Like the Vilna Gaon. Well, it's different. Like the Vilna Gaon. Who cares if I get the schar or not?
Yeah.
Well, because
and by the way, according there are those who want to learn a third approach, that when it comes to Yisachar Zevulun, no one gets diminished. They both get, like, Yisachar doesn't lose and Zevulun only gets. But, it's not the standard approach. It's not the standard approach. And the people don't want to do Yisachar Zevulun because, according to Rav Moshe, Zevulun means you give half of everything. And most people will give money, but don't give half of everything.
But I thought there's still Yisachar Zevulun. I thought Yisachar still gets better schar.
According to the standard understanding, no.
Really?
He loses out. Like this, like the Vilna Gaon, like the Chaim Voloshin saying. Yisachar will lose out, but what do you care? Why does Yisachar care? They lose out. I mean, you could say that Yisachar benefits because he's sitting and learning all day, and that itself is giving an achsuk to Baruch Shalom, and he has better midos and different, you know, he himself is elevated that Zvul doesn't have. But in the next world, Zvul will have it, just like Yisachar. So that's perhaps a benefit. Now, Rav Chaim Voloshin goes on to say something else, which is fascinating.
What do we do when we get away the challah?
I don't know. I think you should say tefillah. It makes sense to me. You should
say tefillah.
And the ikkar is the tefillah.
We'll have to get away the chosen, right?
I don't know if you can.
But if you don't even have a mind to get away
the chosen,
you don't have the chos for.
It means it's the tefillah. I suspect it means the tefillah should be potent. That's one approach. Again, according to this approach, it's going to be the actual schos to the mitzvah.
So that will work.
What?
I don't know.
The tefillah or the second part?
The whole thing.
Tefillahs work.
Not the tefillah, the other.
Just giving away schus. So according to Rav Haigon, no such thing. But according to Rav Chaim Lajon, maybe it does. According to the Nesiv, maybe it does.
Learning in someone's
class
or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you have to actually say tefillah for it to work.
Yeah.
Not having
a mind that now. I mean, again, if you say that the schar is transferable, or like sachas zvulndik, then maybe just say this is the learning today is for the aliyah neshama or for shalem or whatever.
No,
but then we said like whoever.
I mean, that line say. Alone is already a tefillah. As soon as I say this should be a for shalem for someone, so that's a tefillah. He brings this idea, another idea of Chaim Lajon brings, which is a fascinating thought. He says, the Mishnah tells us that we do our Avodas Hashem with not the intent of Mekal Pras. Yet he says, it's very possible that the highest level of Avoda is to serve Hashem Amanas L'Kabal Pras. What does that mean, the highest level is to Mekal Pras? The Ribbono Shel Olam gets a nachas ruach when he gives schar to those who do his ratzon. The Ribbono Shel Olam is a meitiv, and the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever that means, gets nachas ruach by giving schar. So if I do the mitzvah in order for the Ribbono Shel Olam to give schar, that's the highest level of avodah. I don't care if I get it or not. It's irrelevant who gets the schar. I'm doing what Hashem should give the schar. There's a Gemara that says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was espoused to come into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem said no, so in the course of the conversation, the Gemara says to Moshe, why do you want to go to Eretz Yisrael? So I want to do the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem says, I'll give you the schar of the mitzvahs. So everyone says, the schar? He's not instant the schar. He's just doing it not for the schar. So Moshe says, no. He wants to do the mitzvahs. Moshe wants to do the mitzvahs to give the Ribbono Shel Olam the nachas ruach, giving him the schar. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, fine, I have the nachas ruach, I'll give you the schar. Not that he wants it for himself. He wants it because the Ribbono Shel Olam, kava yochel, enjoys giving it. So the test is, whether you're doing it for yourself or for the Ribbono Shel Olam is, do you care who gets the schar? If I care that I get it, then he's not doing it because Hashem gives it. You're doing it because you want to get it. If I don't care if someone else gets the schar, that means I'm not doing because I want schar. I'm doing because I want the Ribbono Shel Olam to give the schar. I don't care whom he gives it to.
But you're doing it because you want someone else specific to get it.
Well, that's in the case of,
right.
You know, in the case
no,
of four. But the idea of this, that might be different.
That's the same as asking for yourself.
Right. The way he's saying it, in the context of Yisachar Zvulun, so a Yisachar could do it Amanas L'Kabal Pras and let Zvulun get the pras. Doesn't bother him, as long as the pras is given.
Oh,
that could be, he's supporting him. But the point is, it shouldn't bother Yisachar that he's not getting the pras. Even though he's not. The question was, is he serving Hashem in order to get pras? He's saying that could be the highest level. But not that I need it for myself.
Why the highest level? Why does Hashem need nachas that way?
That we don't understand b'chal. That's b'chal we don't understand. In other words, the reason Hashem created the world is that we should earn Olam Haba. Mm-hmm. Why should Olam Haba? So he gives us the schar. Why is it? So we don't know the answers beyond that. But it's the same concept. In the essence, the purpose of the Bria is that we should get Schar Olam Haba.
Right, but using the opposite way. Using the purpose of the Bria is Hashem should give Schar.
That's what I just said.
Not that we should get Olam Haba.
The purpose of the Bria was that we could get Schar Olam Haba. What does that mean that we get Schar? That Hashem could give us the Schar for Olam Haba.
Finished. If we go to Olam, if we...
Right. That's it.
Just the fact that is
it. So you can ask again. So why? So we don't know why. At that point, we stop asking questions. We don't know the answers beyond that. But that's what Chaim Lajon tried to point out. When the Tana says, don't serve Hashem amanas l'kabal pras, be like the servant of service without condition of pras, because you have to serve Hashem realizing that this is my purpose in life, this is what's important. But there's a madrega, a very high madrega of serving Hashem, that Hashem should give pras, even if it doesn't have to come to me, I don't need the pras. But if it gives the Ribbono Shel Olam nachas to give pras, then gavaldik, he should give pras. Doesn't have to be
it's
to me.
It's the same thing. Why are we concerned about what Hashem wants to do? Like, just do what he tells us to do.
Right. That's what the Tanna says the way he says it.
Right.
That's ultimately the Tanna says what he says. The way I think more of what this point of Amasa Kal Pras is kind of like the story we always hear about the fellow who hears that someone's flying in, maybe a Shashiva or a friend, and he calls up, can I pick up from the airport? And the fellow says, I have a ride. So how does the person feel? Does he feel upset or he's happy? if his whole goal was that the person have a ride, I don't have to be the one to take him. I don't want to take him. I'm very happy as a ride. It doesn't bother me if it's me or someone else. If it's because I want to be the one to take him, so then it bothers me that someone else is driving him. So again, your motive becomes clear when you're not the one. Is it personal or is it for the other person? Whom are you doing it for? So it's the same concept here on a different level. When we do the mitzvah against schar, we do it because we want the schar for ourselves, or because we want the brachah, we have to give the schar. So that's a very high trigger. So the point is, if the Rambam tells us to be an oyv me'ava is a very rare event, like avam avinu, to serve with no ulterior motive, I suspect that this is even a higher or more rare kind of avoida. I'm an astakala prosper, I don't care who gets the process, not to have to come to me.
Really? It's not like, once you're not getting it, then who gives okay. Anyone? Like, I'm not getting it anyway, so go ahead. Why is it so much higher? I think it's on the same level.
As serving without the intent to get the prize?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit of a,
no,
like, lower.
No.
Like,
it is more.
At least someone's gaining from it.
Right, it is higher. The other level is, forget, we don't need to discuss pros. Pros is irrelevant. It is relevant. Doesn't have to come to me.
But it's making you seem like you know what Hashem wants, really. And
we do, because they tell us.
Not
you know, it's like taiva and kina. If I don't get it and no one gets it, fine, so I can control my taiva.
Right.
But I don't get it and he should get it, that's what you're doing with kina. Then I'm overcoming, I don't have kina either. I think it's a higher level. And again, that's not didn't even make it to the Mishnah. Now, the consequences of this Mishnah.
So how do you train ourselves?
How you train yourselves? By learning Musar, you learn that you want to serve Hashem for the sake of serving Hashem. You work on it. You work on being a Me'ava. You work on it. It's a lifetime endeavor. I don't know if you're familiar or not, the results of this Mishnah. This Mishnah had a terrible effect. There were students of Antigonus Yisoika who heard from him this refrain. It's not he said, the Tanoim who said this in the Mishnah, it's not a one-time thing they said it. These were their mottos. This is their creed. These are the things they would say over and over. And there are two Talmidim who misinterpreted what he said, that if you want me to serve a monastic kalapras, that basically means there's no reward in Shemayim. There's no reward, that means there's no olam haba. And therefore, they began their own sect that rejected Torah Shema Peh entirely. Tzaduk and Baisus, the Tzidukim, the original Tzidukim Baisusim. Tzaduk and Baisus were students of Antigonus Yisoika. And when they heard this concept, they rejected the whole thing. And they embraced only Torah Shebichsav. And that's why we say later on that the Chacham have to be very careful with their words, because people can learn the wrong things from what they said. Obviously, that wasn't the intent. The teacher wasn't saying there's no Olam Haba and there's no Schar. Of course there's Schar. Just that's not shouldn't be your motive. But they misinterpreted what he said, and they began their own sect that rejected Torah Shebichsav entirely. Unfortunately, there are movements around today that are very similar. They're very similar that those who reject, first of all, the Art Sadukim, they're still around today. There are still Sugunas of Soul today, yeah.
They bring a
mm-hmm. There are Sadukim still today.
Where do they live?
Soul. Up north. I don't know. Where's Sadukim?
Oh, you showed us once. I saw you brought in like a form that they.
That was something else. That was a Sadukim. Those were not Sadukim. But there are Sadukim. There are Sadukim in Eretz Yisrael today. In some ways, conservatives remind me very much of Sadukim.
Who are the Sadducees or whatever? Is that Sadukim?
I don't think so. I think that's another sect. Okay. Maybe they're similar to Sadukim. Many conservative things reject various parts of Torah Baal Peh. And it's just unfortunate that this all began, at least at that tekufa, with this Mishnah, a misunderstanding of the concept of Yishamish HaSarav Shalom HaSakavas or Amash HaLakal Pras. It was never intended to state that there's no schar, there's no amhaba, and there's no reward for what we do. That is intrinsic to our emunah, our belief system. It's one of the animamins that we get schar for the mitzvahs that we do. That's clearly one of the yesodis. Why is this one of the ikari emunah? Why is this so important to know that there is schar? So it's good. We should serve Hashem without it. But why do we have to know that there is schar? Why is that one of the 13 ikar of emunah to the point that the Rambam says, if you don't believe in any of the 13, so you have no shakas or kaifah, because, like, why is that? Why is it so important to know that there's schar for the mitzvahs we do? The wording of that particular animamin is, there's a schar and there's oinish. They go hand in hand. If there's schar for the mitzvahs, there's oinish for the averus. If there'd be no schar for oinish, or better, if a person would think there's no schar for oinish, of course, the emes is there is schar v'onesh. But a person didn't know that. That was one not part of his belief system. If there's no schar v'onesh, that means that your actions are irrelevant. What you do is of no meaning and no purpose. When you get punished for something you've done, that means your actions have significance. And when you get rewarded for what you've done, that means your actions are important. If there is no schar, and there is no onesh, that means what you do is totally irrelevant to the world. If you think your actions are irrelevant, you'll know shaychus to klais, to Yiddishkeit. That's one of the necessary components of Judaism, that everything you do counts. It makes a difference. Your mitzvahs are important. Your averus are important in a bad way. So we have to know that up front. There is schar and there's onesh. If you don't get into, if you don't get that, you totally miss the boat. The yesod of schar v'onesh is that the things we do count. The things we do make a difference. And this is a yesod that every girl bas mitzvah and every boy bas mitzvah has to know. That when you become bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah, the things you do affect the world, the universe, the ruchnius realms, everything. Until now it didn't. The children's mitzvahs and averus do not affect globally. It has no universal impact. It may have a personal impact. They'll be personally better people by doing mitzvahs, and they'll be worse by doing averus, but it won't affect anyone else.
So why does Hashem like it? That, like, when children learn and...
It's good training. And Torah is Torah. It is Torah. But when you become an adult, now everything takes on a new dimension. Your mitzvahs are global in effect. They affect the whole Bria. You affect other people, you affect alamos, neshamos, everything. It's all affected by your actions. That's all in this concept of schar v'onesh. So that's intrinsic to our emunah system. And if a person doesn't believe that, so that's going to be a kefira. You can't have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu if you think that it makes no difference whether or not I listen to him or not. It makes a difference. It has an effect. It has an impact. That's the yisoid of schar v'onesh.
Why does it have to be in the way of schar onesh? You could
turn
it
off.
Okay. That's fine.
Why
does it have to be
schar onesh? Schar onesh means there's consequences to your actions.
I know. But like,
so that's
how
you show
the
it.
The father is disappointed that I'm punishing. Or that I'm
that's an onesh.
Knowing disappointment.
Sure. When the parent looks with a smile, that's schar. When the parent looks with a frown, that's an onesh. Mm-hmm. There's different kinds of onesh, different kinds of schar. That's what we daven for in Sim Shalom, right? The Rambam should look at us with a shine and a countenance, so to smile. That's all we ask for, a certain level.